Hi, this is Kurt Mortensen. I'm author of Maximum Influence, Persuasion IQ, and the Laws of Charisma. Welcome to the series on how to maximize your influence without power, position, or authority. Because most of the time in life, we don't have the power to make people do what we want them to do. We don't have the position in our company to make people do what we want them to do or have that authority. Now, we know it's easier to say do it or you're fired, but how do you truly influence and persuade without position? How can you truly influence someone where you can't throw your weight around? So let's focus on how to maximize your influence in the workplace, in life, when sometimes you don't feel you have a lot of power or you don't have the right position or you don't feel you have the authority to make it happen. Let's talk about tools you can use right now to maximize your influence without power, position, or authority. What I mean is sometimes when you negotiate with a bank or you're trying to influence in the workplace or influence your boss, a lot of times we feel that we don't have the power or authority or ways to influence. And I want to show you ways where you can actually influence without authority, without that position, without that power. Because sometimes when you approach a home or approach a banker or approach somebody with a home-based business, a lot of times we feel like equals. We don't feel like we have the authority. We don't feel like we have the expertise. We don't feel like we have any grounds to negotiate. And you have a lot more power than you think. That's what I want to focus on, is you have a lot more power and authority than you think. So let's get you a tool today that will really help you out when you feel that you're in a position where you don't have a lot of pull or a lot of power to persuade and influence. The goal is to learn how to convince people when you're not in charge, how to persuade others when you're not in the right position, how to lead when you're not the boss, how to influence when you don't have any authority, and how to win when you're not the coach. And of course, how to negotiate when sometimes you're not included. What I want to focus on is the art and science of social pressure. We find through research, and you know this to be true about human nature, that most of the time, people will believe other people before they believe you. Well, I guess let me ask you this. Why do you think they always will believe somebody else before they believe you? They either know you, and you sometimes can't be a prophet in your own land, if you've heard that terminology before. They don't think you're credible. And you have something to gain, don't you? For the most part, probably the business interaction, you have something to gain. And when you have something to gain, a lot of times we become very skeptical and we push away. So humans are social creatures and follow social pressure. In fact, 95% of us will usually do or usually follow the social norm. The other 5%, they're probably teenagers, and that's a whole other scenario. But we're just going to talk about the majority of people. The goal here is to let other people apply the pressure. Let other people be the expert. That's okay. Because they're used to giving you internal resistance, especially if you're trying to influence your boss. They might resist you because they're the boss, and they're supposed to have the good ideas, and maybe you haven't had the best ideas in the past, or whatever it is, they tend to push back a little. So let's talk about ways to use that social norm, that social pressure, that social validation to your benefit in every aspect of influence. The greater number of people who find any idea correct, the more the idea will be correct in their mind. And we, as humans, will change our opinions and behaviors consistent with the social norm. We all have a desire to belong. We have a desire to validate what we're doing is right. This is how we decide what is correct behavior. So if you're trying to convince someone to upgrade to new computer software, you could have all the facts and figures in the world, but if you show them the other top 10 companies have already done it, that's probably all you need. We have that proof, that validation, when others are doing what we want to do or have the results that we want. And we've learned as children that we make fewer mistakes when we follow the social norm. Especially, I mean, if you go to a party, you're not sure how to act or what to do, you look around. Advertisers love this lot. Testimonials, the fastest growing, the largest seller. Think about the movies that you go to, the restaurants you go to. A lot of that is social validation. So that social validation compels us to change our behaviors, our attitudes, our opinions, the products that we use. And the media is telling us what we should wear and how we should smell and what we should do. And a lot of times we think it's a social norm. It might not even be the social norm. We seek after social norms to help us know what we should be doing or feeling or act or dress. And it's kind of an unwritten rule sometimes as far as maybe raising our hands to speak or tipping in a restaurant or putting our shoes on somebody's table. Sometimes these are written, sometimes these are unwritten. But let's talk about some examples and think about how to adapt these to what you are doing. Social validation could be anywhere from donation plates you see at churches where they put a few bills in ahead of time just to what they call salt the tip jar. You'll see this with someone playing the guitar on the street, or if you're going on a tour in a bus and they leave a little can up there with some dollar bills on it, that's social validation. Even standing ovations. That's social validation. I was visiting my publisher in New York, and you know, you go see a Broadway show, and this show had won all the awards. That's social validation. And I went to this show, and we had pretty good seats, and about halfway through, I'm like, I don't get it. I want to go home. I just didn't understand it. And usually I like Broadway shows, but this one was like, no. And I thought, well, maybe we better go. And I think, no, it won all the awards. Everyone else is staying. Maybe it's going to get better. So I stayed. So it was halftime or whatever. Okay, intermission. Shows you where my brain's at. So it was intermission, and I was just trying to figure out what's going on. And it didn't get any better. I wanted to leave, but I stayed there. But I could tell it was coming to an end, and I looked to the left and to the right, and I saw these people going down the stairs at the end of the show. I thought that was kind of strange. But right when that show ended, every single one of those people that came in and sat down in different spots, some even sat on the stairs, they all stood up and started clapping. What did everyone else do? They stood up and started clapping. What did I do? Okay. I stood up and started clapping before I even could think about it. I'm sitting there clapping going, this stunk. I hated this thing. But they got a standing ovation out of me. That's sometimes how it happens. Even in like video or DVD stores, when they, let's put it this way, they would follow people into the store and they would go to the return bin to find out what people had been watching. And a lot of times they would pull the ones out of there, because if they're in the return bin and someone else had rented them, they must be good. And so they would take the older movies like Attack of the Killer Tomatoes or and mix them in there, and people would rent them and they would make more money. Even internet downloads. If there's like top 100 downloads and they take number 100 and make it number one, it stays at number one, because if most people are doing it, it must be good. So you need to take a look at your product, your service, or idea, or your area. How are you the best? How are you the fastest selling? Will go a long way to help people out. As you influence other people without authority, if other people are doing it, or other people recommend it, or other departments recommend it, you're borrowing that authority, you're borrowing that influence through social validation. Bookstores, when you go in, the first thing you see is the bestsellers, New York Times bestsellers, or Oprah recommends it. That increases sales. Amazon has their top list too. We talked about donation plates and standing ovations. All that is social validation. And you'll see this quite a bit on the internet, where they'll have, okay, it's say $29.95 a month, or it's $330 a year. And so your choice is to do it by the month or do it by the year. And when people put a little arrow there and it says this is our most popular option by the expensive one, that's enough for a lot of people to do it. If that's the most popular option, that's important and they do it. I'm sure you've been to a restaurant before and you were the only one in that restaurant. So you walked in, you were hungry, you were excited to eat there, and all of a sudden you're the only person in that whole restaurant at lunchtime. How does that make you feel? You're like, I don't know about this. And it's a little nerve-wracking. You don't want to be the only one there. And then if that restaurant owner knows anything about business, where are they going to make you sit? In the front or by the window? That is social validation. Creating lines at a rock club or a a bar sometimes creates a lot of social validation that creates scarcity too. That is what you're looking for. Social validation, even with blood drives. Now, it's ironic that very few people give blood. It saves lives, but the needle tends to make some people hesitate. But what they did, and when they asked people to give blood, they exposed people to 38 different photos on a poster of other people donating blood. That's all they did. It was the only difference between asking them to give blood and then asking them to give blood with pictures of people giving blood. Just by showing the pictures, that social validation increased the chance of the people giving blood by 17%. 17%. When you walk into a Saturn dealership, for example, or any car dealership, they have pictures, Polaroids, of all the happy new car owners. That is social validation. Social validation is critical for what you are doing. Other aspects we need to talk about is using testimonials. You look at infomercials. Infomercials have a 90% failure rate. 90%. That's huge. When that fails, they take them back to the cutting room and they add testimonials. And sometimes they'll add testimonials with people who have no teeth or just don't look that sharp. Why would they do that? Not only a form of social validation, but it's a validation like, well, wait a minute. If they can do that without any teeth or whatever it is, I can do this. So you need to borrow validation, borrow credibility. We've talked about this before. Through testimonials, get other people to recommend you, to endorse you, to tell them that you can do this, make them more money, save them money, save their home, that you're a great resource. Whatever it is, borrow testimonials. And if you're getting into a new industry, you can still borrow credibility and social validation from other industries, of the people you've worked with before. Have them write a glowing testimonial about how you're great to work with and dependable and honest. Whatever it is, testimonials are powerful. I know it's a sad thing, but we'll always believe testimonials more than we will you, because you have something to gain. And you can never have too many testimonials. Ask people for them. It will really help in your social validation. Another thing we see, it's called bystander apathy. This is part, I guess, the dark side of social validation, where our sense of social pressure is lessened when there's a large group of people. And sometimes we feel that those people are more capable of helping than we are. When people are moving a couch, sometimes we don't tend to try as hard. That's bystander apathy. Also, it's called diffusion of responsibility, where we're not sure it's what we're responsible for, if we should even help. If someone's in a park having a heart attack and people are walking by, sometimes we'll walk by and we're not sure if we should help. No one else is. That's bystander apathy. In fact, a study was done with college students, and they had them in this room taking a test. And so they had one person in that room. They started pumping smoke underneath the door to see if people would alert somebody or go get help. And when there was one person in the room, 70% of the time, I don't know what happened to the other 30, but 70% of the time they went to get help. But if there were three people in the room, two were Confederates, that means they were in on the study and only they were testing the one, only 38% of the time did they get help. Because a lot of times, well, if they're not going to get help, it must not be that big of a deal. In fact, that happened in a famous story in New York City with Catherine Genovese. I don't know if you heard that story before, but she was attacked repeatedly in this alley for hours. And then these lights would come on and the attacker would run away and then would come back and would attack her some more. And she'd scream, the lights would come on, attacker would run away and come back. And eventually, and on a sad note, actually killed her. 38 people heard her screams, heard her cries. Not one called the police. And people are like, oh, those New Yorkers are New Yorkers. But the reality is, understanding bystander apathy, what do you think really happened? Everybody thought somebody else would do it. So in a large group or in a board meeting, or we talk about groupthink, or nobody wanted to take in responsibility or being afraid to make a mistake, a lot of times we'll see this bystander apathy. You need to probably attempt to influence one-on-one when you see this happening, because it's easy to get stuck in the group. I mean, the way we react at a concert or a football game with the large group is very different than how we would act or react one-on-one. And we also see that what's called de-individuation, where in a group setting, we tend to be more anonymous and less responsible and pretty much less self-aware. They did a study in Seattle with trick-or-treaters where they would knock on the door, they'd say, trick-or-treat, and the person would say, oh, here's the candy, and the phone would ring and they'd leave, oh, just take one piece, and would walk away. They wanted to see if these kids would steal. And when the trick-or-treater was by themselves, only 7.5% of the time would they steal. But when they were in a group, as you know, it was almost 21% would steal. So sometimes in a group setting, things get strange. You would always want to attempt to influence one-on-one if you can. It's not always possible, but influence is always easier one-on-one than it is in a group situation because of de-individuation and a lot of times that bystander apathy. So as we maximize your influence in situations where you don't feel like you have a lot of authority, like they have all the cards, or you want to influence up the ladder at the workplace, social validation is easier. Social validation is easy because you're borrowing credibility from others. Other people are recommending it. Maybe you have something to gain, or maybe you have a past history or relationship there. Or maybe they're the boss. And again, there's ego involved there. They're the boss. It should be their idea. They should come up with those things. Sometimes that's an issue. We have to persuade and influence with the cards that we're given. So what I want you to do, what I want you to work on, I want you to start thinking about what social proof do you need. So as you look at your idea, your product, your service, whatever it is, how can you provide social proof and letting other people know that this is what the normal decision is. This is the standard. In fact, in real estate negotiation, one of the things that we teach is just by putting standard contract on the top of your contract increases their ability to accept it because it's the standard. That is a powerful word. Well, here's our standard pricing. Here's what we normally offer. This is what most people do. That's borrowing from the social norm. So is your idea, your product or service, is it popular, the most popular, is it the best selling, is it the trend, is it in high demand, is it the norm and the industry standard, are you the best selling person in north, southwestern, Henderson, Nevada in a small area, and you can make it really small if you want because that's going to be going after your demographic, but how can you be the best or the most popular or the fastest selling or the social norm with what you are doing? That's what I want you to focus on this week, is just think about that. Whether you're selling a product on the internet or talking to somebody at the door or doing a negotiation, this always can be applied. And also it can be applied in the workplace. In the workplace, you can influence and get those results when you don't feel like you have that power or position.